Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. In this series, we will be talking with organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who are working both to challenge the Trump administration and the circumstances that created it. It can be easy to despair, to feel like trends toward inequality are impossible to stop, to give in to fear over increased racist, sexist, and xenophobic violence. But around the country, people are doing the hard work of fighting back, coming together to plan for what comes next. This series will introduce you to some of them.
So my name is David Goodner, and I'm part of the Iowa City Catholic Worker Community in Iowa City, Iowa, former community organizer and labor union organizer, and part of sort of an ad hoc group right now that's loosely been called the Kill the Bill Organizing Committee to stop a fairly draconian criminalization of the Senate bill at the Iowa State Capitol.
So this bill is similar to ones that have been introduced in several places around the country, but can you tell us what it is and what it would do?
Yeah, and I think I'll give you kind of a long roundabout sort of answer to that question, because I don't know how familiar your readers or listeners are around the country about the sort of the political scene in Iowa. Mm-hmm. So I'll just take a step back as we move forward. Iowa is a right-to-work swing state that went for Obama in 2008 and 2012. We had the first in the nation caucus, and we catapulted Obama towards the presidency in 2008. We were the first state in the nation to legalize gay marriage, and we had a liberal lie in Senator Tom Harkin in the U.S. Senate for decades. Democrats have been wiped off the mat here in recent years, much like as around the rest of the country. Trump easily carried Iowa in 2016. And Republicans now control the governor's mansion and both chambers at the state house. Yeah. Both Iowa senators are Republican, and 3 out of 4 congressmen are Republican. Iowa's facing a budget shortfall this year as a result of corporate property tax cuts that were supported by Democrats and Republicans in 2014. And now that the GOP controls all levers of state government, they've already worked this legislative session, which just started a few weeks ago, to slash our state budget by $118 million. Disproportionately impacting our schools and our mental health services. And they're working hard to destroy public sector collective bargaining, defund Planned Parenthood, institute voter ID, slash environmental regulations on factory farms. We're the number one home of factory hog farms. Turn over immigration information collected by law enforcement and state universities to the federal government, and a whole host of other bad things. But there's also a lot of inspiring social movement organizing in Iowa. It's not to scale compared to, New York City or L.A. or anything. But in 2012, a grassroots community organization named Iowa CCI bird-dogged Mitt Romney at the state fair and forced him into his Corporations Are People, My Friend gaffe. Right. There was a relatively strong Occupy Wall Street movement here. Bernie Sanders tied Hillary Clinton in the Iowa caucus. And on January 21st, the day of the Worldwide Women's Marches this year, 26,000 people rallied at the state capitol in Des Moines, which is the second largest protest in Iowa state history. Just this last week, 2,000 people demonstrated in Iowa City on February 5th and another 2,000 in Des Moines on February 2nd to protest President Trump's Muslim ban and immigration policies. After the election on Friday, November 11th, dozens of high school students in Iowa City walked out of class, and over 100 high school, college, and graduate students blockaded Interstate 80 for over half an hour, shutting down traffic on arguably the largest interstate in the country. This action, more than any other, prompted Republican lawmakers at the state house to introduce legislation that would make blockading highways and interstates a felony offense, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. And our Kill the Bill organizing committee, we've labeled it the criminalization of dissent bill, and we're doing as much organizing as we can with the plan to stop it dead in its tracks.
This bill is particularly aimed at the blockading of traffic. So can you talk a little bit about the history of that tactic in particular in Iowa and why they're going after that one in particular?
Well, there's no question that it was a direct response to the action that took place in Iowa City on November 11th, just a few days after Trump was elected, when over 100 people marched in the streets without a permit onto the interstate and stopped eastbound traffic for over half an hour. That's what made this bill happen. I don't think that tactic's been used in Iowa since the Vietnam War. It was something that definitely happened in the 68 to 72 era, but it hasn't really been seen here since. And I think it really marks an escalation of social movements very much in line with what's happening around the country today. Mm-hmm. And I think it scared the pants off of these guys, and they're trying to do what they can to shut down successful protesting.
Yeah. And so obviously we've seen this tactic, as you said, sort of rising in recent years. What are some of the arguments that are being mobilized to justify making it a felony?
Well, and we should pause and give credit to the Black Lives Matter movement, because I think they really brought this specific tactic back in the last few years, blockading highways and interstates in order to shut down business as usual. The argument that we're hearing from the bill's sponsor, Senator Jake Chapman, a Republican from Adel, Iowa, is that it's disruptive to the economy and that it's putting people's lives at risk.
Yeah.
And preventing, you know, ambulances and law enforcement from getting to where they need to go.
Right.
This is really over the top, in our opinion. I mean, anybody who's ever driven on a highway or interstate before knows that car accidents happen. Yeah. And that you can, if you get stuck behind a car accident, traffic could be shut down on an interstate for an hour or longer.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about doing away with interstate traffic. We also know that there was a recent example just in Minneapolis a few days ago where there was a big road blockade by demonstrators, and an ambulance tried to get through, and the demonstrators parted ways, let the ambulance through, and then put their blockade back up.
Yeah.
So the ambulances always get through, and this idea that people are going to be rushed to the hospital, they're not going to get the medical care they need, it's frankly absurd. There's always another way to go.
Yeah. And in some case, right, when they're saying that it disrupts economic activity, that is kind of the point.
Yes, they are technically correct about that. I mean, that's why people use this tactic, is to shut down business as usual so we can open the country back up to democratic dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to do in these days and times. But what I would respond to that is economic activity gets stopped in this country all the time. Again, the proverbial car accident scenario. Why not for free speech?
Right.
Why not when we are facing some of the most pressing social problems ever seen in world history? Cannot organized citizens take to the streets and temporarily shut things down in order to make their voices heard?
Yeah.
If we live in a democracy, if the Constitution means anything at all, that stuff needs to have a lot of leeway from our political system. And when Republicans try to crack down on that, it sends a very distressing signal to people that their voices don't matter and that the effective ways of making their voices heard are being taken away from them. And that ain't right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the organizing that's going on in response to this. What's it been like? How much support are you getting to try to kill the bill?
Well, after the action on November 11th, I mean, it was a fairly controversial action. There were people in the community who supported the protests, but were concerned that it was a radical action and could have endangered people, especially the protesters who first walked onto the highway to block traffic. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
And you never really hear about people getting hurt in these types of actions. But there were those concerns, and we have to take those, you know, from our supporters at face value and have a good dialogue about them.
Yeah.
We've basically been working on an inside-out strategy. So we're in Iowa City, which is fondly known as the People's Republic of Johnson County.
Mm-hmm.
It's home to the Big Ten Research University, the University of Iowa, which is best known for its writer's workshop and medical and law schools.
Yes.
But that's 110 miles away from the state capitol.
Right.
So most of what we're planning have been planning and organizing meetings here locally, op-eds in the local newspapers, rallies and banner drops, legislative forums with our state legislators here in town, and other protests. That's kind of the outside part, hitting the streets to make our views known. But we also know that this bill is going to be debated at the state house in Des Moines, 110 miles away from where the original action took place, and that we have to have a presence at the subcommittee and committee hearings. So we'll also be putting together phone and email blasts to the bill's sponsor, Senator Jake Chapman, as well as the members of the Transportation Committee. And we need to mobilize at the state capitol and attend some of these committee meetings when we can give public testimony and, if necessary, take direct action and maybe even civil disobedience inside the state house so that we can kill the bill.
How does this sort of lay groundwork for more organizing in the future, this organizing around this bill?
I think it does that in a couple different ways. The first one is free speech is ingrained in this country, and people care about their right to protest, about their right to make civil dissent. And so I think there's an opportunity here as we take action on this bill to help build the anti-Trump movement to a bigger level. Yeah. Because of the radical nature of the highway blockade that we did in November, it's also a chance to hopefully radicalize the movement as we're growing it so that people see these type of tactics as becoming more and more normal, and that we can actually normalize the idea that mass groups of people can walk out and can disrupt traffic in order to make their views known and petition their government for a redress of grievances, just like it is enshrined in the Constitution.
The highway blockades are in some ways that the idea of shutting down business as usual is related to labor strikes, right? It's a question in either way of how people can halt economic activity, right? And so as somebody who has been a labor organizer, talk about these kinds of tactics and the value of them and why they're gaining increasing relevance and popularity under Trump.
I mean, it seems like people are just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that's why we're seeing this mass movement. So far, it's eclipsed Occupy Wall Street. It's eclipsed Black Lives Matter. It's even eclipsed the Standing Rock No Dapple movement, which before Trump was elected was kind of the hottest thing going in this country.
Yeah.
And like we talked about before we started this interview, we're only 3 weeks into the Trump administration, and we're already seeing perhaps one of the largest mass movements in American history. And I believe that it's only going to get better or worse, depending on which side you're on, that this movement's going to continue to grow. We're going to bring in more and more people. And where we really need to take it now is we need to start bringing in the working class, everyday people, working families, in order to build the movement, in order to take it in that direction where we're starting to look at workplace actions and strikes as a way to shut down the country so that we can open it back up.
Yeah. Speaking of pipelines, the pipeline was going to go through parts of Iowa, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the resistance in Iowa around the pipeline that did not get quite as much attention as the blockade at Standing Rock, but still...
Well, everybody here hats off to the indigenous people at Standing Rock.
Yeah.
They've really shown the rest of the country, just like indigenous people have done throughout our country's history, the proper way to fight back against injustice and the way to incorporate prayer with confrontation in order to get done what needs to get done. So we have to take our hats off to the indigenous people. We have to thank them. And we have to be very humble and respectful about their point of view and realize that they led the social movement and that they need to be the ones that are continued to be in front of the movement, especially the indigenous women who time and time again we saw really taking charge and really being the leaders of that fight. Now, we did have a very, very robust resistance movement against the pipeline here in Iowa. It had been going on since the pipeline was announced in 2014. And last year in the fall of 16, before the election, there was close to 200 arrests for nonviolent civil disobedience in several different areas for weeks and weeks. And that was really an incredible thing that you don't really see happening in Iowa very often, certainly not in my lifetime.
And so sort of going forward, obviously, Trump is going to push for the completion of this pipeline, of all the pipelines. How do those issues get connected up, but what are the conversations that you're having with people to connect all of these issues together?
Well, the pipeline's completely buried in Iowa.
Yeah.
If we had a really, really mass movement, maybe we could talk about like digging the pipe back up, but that's probably not realistic.
Yeah.
One thing that I think really connected with folks here beyond the struggle in North Dakota and people's desire to stand in solidarity with the indigenous people is most Iowans know very well from personal experience the importance of water quality, because Iowa has some of the worst water quality in the entire world, mostly because of corporate agribusiness, factory farming, corn and soybeans, fence row to fence row style of agribusiness that has taken over, destroyed the family farmer, destroyed the mom and pop meat lockers and the entire infrastructure of a family farm economy. And so it was really easy to pivot from that through the years and years of organizing around clean water issues in Iowa to understand just how important this pipeline fight really was. And I think moving forward, whether it's the Dakota Access Pipeline, whether it's a factory farm hog lot that's being built next door to a rural community, clean water is going to always be an important issue in Iowa, and it's always going to be a tool that social movements can use to organize not just your usual suspects, but actually rural Iowans, people who voted for Trump, people in the rural countryside that aren't your typical anarchist demonstrators.
it's interesting that we're talking about this because there are all these conversations going on right now about how certain tactics are going to alienate people. And so it's really interesting to hear you talking about the defense of the right to protest as actually a way to bring people in.
Absolutely. Stuff like what happened at Berkeley, that is going to be controversial. But I think we also have to realize that controversy, in at least in that sense, confrontation won. And when we went to the airports all over the country and confronted, and there was really the risk of shutting down these major airports, these major centers, again, of economic activity, we won major concessions from the Trump administration on his bad policy. The Women's March, having millions of people in the streets, there may not have been a clear-cut victory, but I think it did energize and mobilize people to realize that we can win when we stick together, when we develop a mass movement strategy, and when we fight like hell. And we need to take that just as seriously as we take the concerns about property destruction or about people with masks on and how that might look to middle America as well. Because I think people here in Iowa, they want to stand with somebody who knows is fighting for them. And they're not going to care so much about ideology if they can see that there's a movement that has their back and is going to defend their interests. People are going to sign up and join it.
Yeah, it is. Middle America gets fetishized in very interesting ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, here in Iowa, we do have a long history going back to the populist movement at the turn of the century, the late 1900s. Family farmers, workers from all kinds of different sectors, people do stand together and take action for what's right. And again, we might be a swing state, but the same people who voted for Trump this year voted for Obama the last 2 years, and a lot of them voted for Bernie Sanders in the caucus. So there's not an easy quantity of liberal and conservative. It's about everyday people, and it's about everyday people versus big corporations and a government that's going to work for us or that's going to work for them. And when we articulate things in that way, like we saw the Sanders campaign do, the people that we don't think are on our side, we realize actually are with us and we can work together.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to sort of close up, you've been organizing in Iowa for a while now. So talk about some of the things that you've learned, things that have been successful, things that have been less successful, that people who are thinking about organizing in more rural areas, in whiter areas, in smaller cities can learn from that.
Well, I mean, I think the most useful organizing experience that I've had personally was as a rural environmental and family farm organizer with Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. That's a statewide community power group that has over 3,000 dues-paying members and uses direct action as their primary tactic to talk, act, and get things done. And their base, again, is not college kids. It's not liberals or anarchists. It is rural, countryside, family farmers, people who live in rural Iowa, people who watch Fox News. And when a big, giant corporate factory farm is being built across from the farmstead that your family has owned for 150 years, ideology goes out the window. You're mad as hell about your life being impacted. And when people can come to you and talk to you in the language that you understand, speak to your self-interest, build a personal one-on-one relationship with you, and show you a time-tested, proven method that can get you what you want, when you join with other people in your neighborhood, in your community, at your churches, the folks you see at the grocery store, in school, in the church pews, beautiful things can happen. And I think that's sort of the mindset that we need to take into these red states, into these places that we don't think are with us, because I know that they are. We just have to talk to them in the right way.
Excellent. And how can people keep up with you and your work, other than your wonderful op-ed, of course?
Well, the Des Moines Register is really the newspaper of record. So anytime folks want to know what's happening on the ground in Iowa, check out the Des Moines Register. Also, the Iowa City Catholic Worker. We have a Facebook page. Can plug into some of the work we're doing there to serve the poor in our community. And just be looking for stuff coming out of Iowa, because this bill, we have to stop it. And there is a live and active resistance here that's going to continue.
Thank you for listening. Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe, with assistance from Laura Fulibois and support from the Nation Institute. Thanks to all of our partner publications, The Baffler, The Progressive, Truth Out in These Times. You can find out more on the web at necessarytrouble.org, and reach me there if you'd like to become a partner publication. We will be back soon.